Seth Lloyd, author of Programming the Universe, a quantum computer scientist takes on the cosmos, once said, "A classical computation is like a solo voice, one line of pure tones succeeding each other. Quantum computation is like a symphony, many lines of tones interfering with one another." Well then, let's get symphonic. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. This here electronic engineering podcast brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Yes, quantum computing is the name of the game in this week's podcast. Stefano Pellerano from Intel Labs joins me to discuss the challenges he has encountered as a researcher in this space, the interconnect challenges inherent in quantum computing, and the super cool stuff Intel is doing in the quantum computing space. So, without further ado, let's welcome Stefano to Fish Fry. Hi, Stefano. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. My pleasure.
Okay, so first off, can you help our listeners understand at a high level what Intel is doing in the quantum computing space?
Yes, sure. So quantum computing is, as you know, probably is this very new, amazing area of research, right? And it's covering a big range of expertise, all different. So you go from algorithms to software compilers, or computer architecture, circuit design, and then, you know, thermal challenges, because always low temperature is involved, to actual quantum mechanics, right? So at Intel, what we're trying to do is to address the challenge of building this quantum computer as a whole, as the full system. So we're actually doing research on all the different aspects, and we used to say we do research on the full stack. I believe that this is one of our strengths because we have a very diverse set of talents in all the different areas in the labs. And so, you know, when you look at what we have today in the world in terms of quantum computers, these are working in the labs, so very, very specific problems. And so what we want to do is move this machine outside lab environment and engineer them so that we can actually use them to solve important, useful problems that can really impact, you know, your life or my life and the life of everyone else. And so what we call this goal is actually quantum practicality.
Okay, fantastic. Now, let's talk about Horse Ridge. What exactly is it for my audience who may not know, and how does it fit into Intel's overall quantum story? What is Intel doing that is different from other quantum players?
To answer this question, I need to maybe go a little into the heart of a quantum computer. So when we look there, what we see is this quantum bit or the qubit. So this is basically the unit of information that uses this very fascinating quantum mechanical properties of nature and enable a new form of computation. And this new form of computation is actually what enabled this speed up. It's an exponential speed up on the solution of certain problems. So just to give you an idea, imagine that you want to solve a very complex problem. One of these could be the typical, you know, sail trouser problem where you have to hit many cities and you want to find the shortest path to visit all the cities, right? This is a very famous one. And so such type of problems today maybe would take the classical supercomputer several years to be solved. By using quantum mechanics properties in quantum computers, this might take only a few hours. So you can see how this can really revolutionize the way we solve complex problems. The issue here is that these qubits are very sensitive to the environment, are very fragile. And so any interaction with the environment will basically kill the qubit. And so what you see is that often these devices, because they're actually physical entities, often cool down at temperature that are 200, 300 times colder than deep space. So we're talking about very, very low temperatures. And this is done in these big dilution refrigerators that you might have seen in pictures. Then the other interesting aspect is that if we want to manipulate this information or even read this information in these qubits, we need to use very high precision electrical signals. And these signals need to be routed to each qubit. And so you can clearly see now where the problem is. So we have many qubits, say even thousands or millions, that are needed to really solve usual problems. These qubits are into this dilution refrigerator, and we need to route signals to each one of them. So we effectively have this interconnect bottleneck where we need all these cables going into the fridge. So this solution today, you can see that it won't scale very well when we increase the number of qubits. So what we're trying to do with our switch is effectively addressing this bottleneck. And we do this by placing this electronics that generates all these control signals, and we place it inside the refrigerator, operating only a few degrees above the absolute zero, again, very close to the qubits. So that now we can leverage all the interconnect scaling, integration, and all the newest technology in a similar way how these are used in classical computer, because now the control electronics that is creating these signals is sitting very close to where the qubits are inside the fridge. And so the interconnect that goes inside and outside the fridge is only a digital interconnect that can scale well and use the latest technology innovations. So in a sense, it's not all about the number of qubits. That's what I'm trying to convey. For example, having good qubits without solving this interconnect bottleneck would be like driving a race car while stuck in traffic. So not very, very pleasant, I would say.
That's a great analogy. Now, I've been hearing a lot about companies announcing their progress in developing larger number of qubits, but talk about that interconnect problem a bit more. Why is that important to solve here?
Yes. So having good qubit, as I mentioned, is important. And today, quantum supremacy has been demonstrated using 53 qubits. But in reality, as I mentioned already, if we want to solve useful problems, we really need to have in the thousands or millions of qubits. And so, again, when we look at the solution today that we see in the labs, what we see is big, expensive, bulky instrumentations that are generating all these signals. And the signals go into coax cables, or like cables with very high quality. And all these cables are routed inside the fridge, and they go down into the fridge to reach the qubit chip. So when we want to, say, scale the quantum computer to millions of qubits, now this would require millions of cables going into the dilution refrigerator. So it's clear that this solution doesn't scale. It would be like wanting to build a classical computer and, say, having your microprocessor in one room and your memory in the other room, and then just running cables between them. As you know, is the invention of integrated circuits, meaning the possibility of putting circuits, memory, and all the different functions close together in a piece of silicon. They really made the advancement in the consumer electronic, if you wish, and also the development of personal computers. So I think we are seeing kind of the same transition between, you know, the time where supercomputers or even classical computers were occupying an entire room because they were using valves and other discrete component, to when integrated circuits was invented and the transistor with it. And we saw an explosion in computing power. And now we have basically supercomputers in our hands looking at our smartphones. So I think we are in the same inflection point for quantum computing.
So, Stefano, your background is in RF design technologies. How did you find your way into quantum research?
This was a great opportunity. And this is one of the reasons why I love working at Intel Labs, because, you know, among other things, they also gave me the opportunity to work in this very, very interesting and challenging field. So how this started is that long ago, I actually organized a panel on how to do research in a big corporation. And this was a large RF conference in US. And I invited actually the director of Intel Labs at that time. So I got a chance to meet him better. And also, you know, I got a chance to know what I was working on. And so later, when Intel was actually looking for an academic partner for the quantum computing program, as I explained before, part of the stack is the control electronics for qubit. And these signals are very often at radio frequencies, which is my background. I was actually asked to help interviewing different professors, specifically on this part of the system, on the control electronics. And so, you know, from there on, my involvement started growing, and, you know, that's where I am today. In general, I always loved quantum mechanics. While I was living in Milano, attending university, As a joke, I used to write the Schrödinger equation with my finger on the window glass of the kitchen of my apartment when it would fog up, and then debate with my roommate endlessly on the meaning of the universe while, of course, we were eating perfectly cooked pasta.
I love that. So, Stefano, Intel recently published some research findings on Horse Ridge, along with another partner, QTech, in Nature. So help my listeners understand, what was the key breakthrough you documented through that paper?
This was an amazing achievement, and I have also to give credit to our partners in QTech and QDel for this. It was an amazing collaboration. So you see, we are trying to disrupt the ecosystem. And we are saying, okay, in order to scale, we need to take the control electronics that is sitting at room temperature, make an integrated solution, and put it in the fridge and operate at cryogenic temperature. So, you know, we are scientists. We try to predict the future, in a sense, but we need the experimental proof. And so this work that was reported in Nature was the first time that we were actually able to demonstrate with experimental data that using Horse Ridge as a qubit controller operating at this very low cryogenic temperature inside the fridge produces the same level of quality, and we call this fidelity, compared to the conventional solution using bulky and expensive instrumentation at room temperature outside the fridge. And also we did this using a type of benchmarking test that is very well established in the field. And this is called randomized benchmarking. So this is a critical milestone in our program, since finally it gives us confidence that we are on the right path for a scalable solution.
Now, your paper also highlighted frequency multiplexing as a key progress milestone that was achieved. So help my listeners understand what that was all about and why it matters for quantum scalability in particular.
So frequency multiplexing is a way to relax this interconnect challenge. And let me explain a little bit about this. In a sense, it can be compared to a cellular network, you know, the network that, you know, we all connect when we talk to our cell phone. So typically, we can expect that many, many people would like to talk on their cell phone at the same time. However, like in a crowd, if many people talk at the same time, no one can really understand. And this technically is called interference. So how this is dealt with in a cellular network is that each user is actually assigned a different channel, like the channels that you can select on your, you know, two-way radios. And so interference can be avoided. For the Horse Ridge, we're using this technology with qubits so that we can actually control several qubits over a single cable. So we assign different frequencies or different channels, if you wish, to each qubit so that we can send signals on the same cable addressing different qubits without creating interference. And so this basically creates multiplexing. So the ability of reducing the number of cables to control the same number of qubits, because we can control many qubits over a single cable.
That makes sense. Now, there aren't a lot of engineers who are formally trained as quantum computing engineers. This field does seem to draw from other disciplines, however. So what kind of talent does the Intel quantum program really look for?
We are really pushing for quantum practicality and working on the full stack at Intel. So this means that we really need a wide set of skills and expertise in the team. However, I think the characteristic or the trait that I think it's critical for this effort is the ability to go outside your comfort zone, outside the comfort zone of your own expertise. And also on the other side, the ability of learn and speak other people's technical language. I give you an example. Like if I ask for some specific behaviors of technical characteristic of the qubit to one of our physicists, and the answer I get is a page full of math, you know, well, that doesn't really help me much. So the analogy I like to do here is like, I feel that doing research on quantum computing today is like writing a book in a new language with authors from all different countries. So I think this diverse talent, skill, and the ability of speaking each other language is really, really critical. And that's the talent that we're looking for.
Excellent. And I really like that analogy as well. Awesome. Well, Stefano, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, lately, I've been doing a bit of a COVID special here on Fish Fry. So here we go. We've been in lockdown. It's starting to ease up a little bit, it seems. But it has been for a long time that we can't get our favorite foods. So, Stefano, if there is one food you could have right now, it doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, you need a passport to get there, it's on the other side of the world, what would you have?
Okay, so I did not miss any restaurants during my COVID lockdown. Actually, I was very, very lucky because, you know, my favorite restaurant is home. I am married to my Italian wife, and, you know, she's a great cook. And I'm not saying that I'm married there for the food, but yeah, I really love, of course, Italian foods, specifically, you know, all type of pasta and pizza. And we do everything from scratch. I can also make my own pasta from scratch. I have to say that. But I've been lucky because I actually enjoyed my COVID time in the house because, you know, I got to eat more probably.
I love that. So is there one food that your wife makes that's your favorite above all else?
Yes. It's a specific type of pasta made with, you cannot really call meatballs because there's no meat in this specific recipe. And this is like a poor people meatball pasta because instead of using meat, it uses bread and eggs and flour to make the meatballs. But these are delicious and they really suck in all the tomato sauce. So it's, please don't get me started.
That sounds amazing. Well, Stefano, this has been a really cool interview. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome. And, you know, thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed talking to you about quantum computing at Intel.
Don't forget to check out my brand new maker-themed monthly fish fry podcast series called Makers Today. Launched last week in honor of Women in Engineering Day on June 23rd, this first episode features maker, teacher, content creator for Element 14's Learning Circuit, and power racing record holder, Karen Corbeil. We talk about the maker movement today, the cool stuff she likes to design, and more. And you can check out this episode of Fish Fry, Makers Today, by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. And if you're a maker and you'd like to be featured on this series, please let me know. Send me an email at amelia@eejournal.com. Send me a message on LinkedIn or Carrier Pigeon. Whatever works for you. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review and 5 stars on that podcasting platform of your choice. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, or heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of July 2nd, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.